Welcome to Brad Golf Podcast, a podcast for the average golfer. My name is Dermot Bradfield and golf is in my blood. Join me as I fumble my way around this fascinating sport.
Welcome back to Brad Golf. It's the 28th of October. This is episode 22 of the Brad Golf Podcast series. This week, we're going to recap on Zozo. We'll look at Nigel's picks for the Bermuda Championship. We'll also look at some events on the PGA Tour and back at home. As usual, please do subscribe to the podcast. You'll find Brad Golf TV on many podcast platforms, including Anchor, Google, Apple, Spotify, and others. Please follow, like, retweet, and share on social media. You'll find Brad Golf TV on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook. You can also contact us on email, bradgolftv@gmail.com. Let's get this party started, though. Nigel, welcome back. And what a week for Nigel's picks at the Zozo. Another winner. Cha-ching. Welcome back.
How you doing, Dermot? Get in there. Another winner. Gotta love it.
Yeah. What a great week for your picks.
But Patrick Cantlay was awesome on Sunday. You know, after his first three rounds, he'd no bogeys. He was as solid as he could be. He was nicely positioned. He was three off the lead, I think. Yeah, he was three off the lead going into the final round. It seemed that JT and John Rahm seemed to get into a kind of a match play situation, or they were very much watching each other.
They were, yeah.
And Cantlay was playing the group ahead of them, playing his own game, started lovely on the front nine, rolled in a few big monster putts for birdies, and just got on and hit a birdie stretch just in the middle of the back nine while Rahm and JT were kind of psyching each other out and making mistakes. And he basically at one stage was three ahead. Now, he had a little bit of a wobble on 16 with a very iffy wedge shot that caused a bogey, but he was solid enough on 17 and 18, and it was just enough to get the victory. I was sweating a bit. I know I was talking to you about cashing out.
Yeah.
But I hung on in there, thankfully.
Thankfully, yeah. So overall, look, I had a few points written down here that I said we'd have a quick chat about. So you touched on a few of them already, but let's just explore. First up, was John Rahm and JT, so they definitely got sidetracked. There's no doubt about it. Now, it looked for a while like it was going to be match play to decide who was going to win it. But very quickly, that did change as Cantlay started to shoot the lights out. But they got incredibly sidetracked. And this match play, in fact, it really came to a head on the par 5 13th. For me, this is a prime example of where the two of them were not really... John Rahm in particular, we're not really focused on the job at hand, but they were focusing on each other. So let's just talk through that hole. You know, off the tee, we've got John Rahm, middle of the fairway, bombed one down there, right? Really good drive. And JT, as he had been leading up to this point, off the tee, was very poor. He went very much to the right again, off the tee on 13th, and he was in, well, down a bit rough. It's probably the best way of putting it. Our rough has been very heavy of late. He was buried in there, wasn't he, on the 13th?
Yeah, and it forced him to lay up.
And his layup ended up in the hazard. So he actually had to take a penalty drop. And something went on in John Rahm's head then, because John Rahm was thinking, okay, he's in trouble here. He's going to get a 6. So a 5 is probably all I need. And John Rahm plays a really... He misses on the short side, which is not the side to miss on a 13. And now he's making actually...
He put it in the bunker,
yeah,
actually.
Short side left, not the side to miss on.
Yeah, but he was short side left and left himself, a horrible shot.
Horrible,
really.
Horrible shot. Yeah. And as it turns out then, instead of, you know, focusing on getting his birdie, which he should have been, it was a case of get one better than JT on the hole. He ended up himself bogeying, and somehow JT got a ridiculous par on the 13th. That leveled things up at that stage. But this match play... It really cost him on 13. And then on 16, similar again. So JT, what went on with that second shot? So I know we were talking at the time, and he was taking his time over the ball. He really wasn't comfortable, and he hits this super block to the right on his second shot. Horrendous shot. What did you think at that stage?
My view at the time was, you know, left would have been a lot better than where he ended up, because you know, he went well right, and I've seen him make that miss a couple of times this year. I think the playoff in the Workday Charity Open against Morikawa springs to mind anyway, but yeah, that was a bad miss after a really good drive. You know, he was in the driving seat there in the best possible position to you know, hit the green in two, and he just hit an awful shot. Didn't essentially, because he was so much worried about left, he sprayed it out right, and just there was no commitment to the shot. And it was similar to his shot on 15 where he left it short and it almost in the hazard. Like, it's, you know, he's a great player, but sometimes down the stretch he makes a few bad decisions.
Is there a trend here, Nigel? Like, if you look at it, Nigel, when he won the FedEx St. Jude, he was ropey at best down the back nine. Now, he was far enough ahead that it didn't really matter. Losing out to Morikawa, he was very poor in the final three or four holes that put him into playoff.
Yeah, but he won the St. Jude, though.
Well, he did, but
he won the St. Jude. He did it not. Yeah,
he wasn't good coming down the back nine. Straight up, he was lucky. He was three or four shots ahead, and it didn't really matter. But he was ropey.
No,
off the tee, I felt he was very ropey.
I have a theory that now he's very loyal and very comfortable with the caddy he has, Jimmy Johnson, who's been a caddy for years and has caddy for a lot of great players. But I think he may need to get rid of him, because he won this when your man Jimmy Johnson was out injured or sick for a while, and he had Bones McCoy, who's Mickelson's old caddy, who does the commentary on course, and he was on the bag at the St. Jude when he won, and I think they had a better relationship. It was like it seemed to rejuvenate him a bit, and seemed to, I don't know, he seemed a bit more relaxed.
Yeah.
Because I think when he's got the other caddy, he's more of the boss as such. And I think he was listening to Bones a bit more than he was listening to the other guy. So I don't know. I think at that level, it's the kind of the tiny fractions that add the difference to winning and losing. I think a new caddy might be the order of the day.
Yeah.
In my estimation.
So one thing that happened during the event that we were chatting about, and he, on the 15th, he got a huge break on the 15th. To par three, as you said, signature hole of the course, by the way, which was a fantastic course. Really spectacular to look at. I'd love to play it sometime.
Yeah, I loved it. It looked great.
It did. Like, there was a lot of shot shaping that was required as well, which I liked. You know, you're not just hitting down a straight fairway. There was a bit of shot shaping required. But on the 15th, he got a huge break. He left it short, which, to be honest, it was only going to end up one place, which was short, because on the tee, he stepped back. He was about to hit, then he stepped back because the wind was picking up. He was like, oh, I'm not sure about this. And didn't change club. Like, what are you doing, mate? But he didn't change club. Drops it in to what looked like it was in the penalty area. It looked like it was dead and buried. But he went down there and found it. And he just about had a shot at it. So he gets down into the penalty area, and he's taking aggressive practice swings. Like, he's hitting the bank. Like, he's full on hitting that bank at thump. And a few people are asking me, whoa, what's this about? What's this about? So, yeah, just clarifying the new rules. Penalty areas are still parts of the course. So you can ground your club. You can take practice swings. That's all the same as it used to be. Now, what distinguishes this from a bunker is, under the new rules, penalty areas and bunkers are separate things. Whereas in the old rules, they were very similar in structure, in that a penalty area, or a hazard, as it used to be back in the day, hazards were also bunkers. So if you were in a hazard or in a bunker, you couldn't ground your club, you couldn't take practice swings. But now that the distinction has been split, that bunkers are bunkers and penalty areas are penalty areas, you can ground your club, you can take practice swings, you can take divots in penalty areas. So yeah, he had a good feel, and he needed to, because it was a high risk shot, wasn't it, to just get himself back on the green.
Yeah, it was also a risk to his wrist. You know, his wrist did get jarred a bit, you know. So, and his caddy at the time was wondering why he was going for it, why he didn't just play from the drop zone.
Yeah,
it was probably the right play, but the play off the tee, you know, the miss is definitely long. You can't miss short.
Yeah,
he was going for it. He was seemed to be on the limit. And again, the caddy didn't step in. The caddy that seemed to be pretty sure of the club didn't, again, that was a situation where I thought the caddy should have said, listen, take an extra club. I think he was in an 8. He should have maybe choked down a 7 or just hit a smooth 7 or something. And, you know, if you go long, you're long, you know, you'll still have a chance of a par. But where he was, you know, he was lucky to get a bogey.
So moving on from JT, who definitely did not impress, yet finished one back, just shows you the quality in the player. John Rahm. So John Rahm, I think, you know, he lost it, in my opinion, on the par fives coming in, 13th and 16th, where he didn't birdie. From great drives. Like, he was almost within reach of both of the par fives. Almost, not quite. But really good drives and didn't birdie either. So I think for me, that's where he lost the tournament. But what was he doing on 16 going with a full out tree wood when he just carried the penalty area? If he had laid up, he would have had another maybe 30 yards to shot. That's all, 30 yards. He was still going to have to get it up there on the green. What was he doing going full tree wood at that stage? What was in his head?
I don't know. His drive or his tee shot, really, because I think he took a driving iron off for position and left himself too far back to make the green. And then he was so far back, even clearing the hazard was a doubt, but he still went for it, as you said, and only just about cleared it. He absolutely nutted that tree wood and only just about made it.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, you would question definitely his strategy there, but I think his play on 13 was really, that was the bogey of par five like that when most people are birdieing it. That was the sort of play, along with what we just talked about with JT, which let Cantley into the tournament and let him take the lead that he didn't really give up.
Yeah. I must correct myself here.
That,
And I must correct myself here. Sorry, apologies. He did birdie 16, but he was lucky to, having just carried the penalty area on his second shot there. And I just thought there was no need to take that on, really. He was gaining 30 yards for what was still going to be an approach shot. Coming down 18, Nigel, you were a disgrace, Nigel. You sent a message to me. So Rahm was down the middle of the fairway. He's taking his second shot. He stands over the shot, and you just say, shank it. Now, that was out of order. He hit a shank. What day of the week was it that he hit the shank on 18?
I think that was on the first round.
Round, he hit a proper,
it was early in the week anyway. Yeah.
It was a full-on power shank is what he hit earlier in the week. And I know the coverage did pick up on it to say that, well, this probably is going through his mind. He needed to put it close to get a chance. He needed to put it close. And he didn't do too bad. It was a good shot in. But there's no doubt it was on his mind. And if you were in that gallery, you would have been whispering it, you know, shank, shank, shank. There's no doubt, because there was a bit of money on the line. But it was an exciting finish. He went for it, but he just overcooked the shot in, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't a bad shot. He just left himself a tricky downhill putt, and he couldn't really go for that putt.
Yeah.
As such, he couldn't race at it. I thought I thought him or JT might get a birdie and force a playoff. But, you know, it was a very tense last couple of holes. I nearly cashed out twice. I just felt that one of them was going to force the playoff. And in that situation, you would favor them because they're after getting into the playoff when they thought they'd lost it. So, I was delighted that he avoided that. He was the best player of the week, Cantley. Very consistent, only two bogeys in the week.
Yeah, if we could just compare him to our own boy, right? So Cantley had 25 birdies, 2 bogeys, no eagles. So he was just Mr. Steady, 25 birdies, 2 bogeys. Rory had 29 birdies. So, by the way, a career high for Rory, 29 birdies. So 4 birdies more. But he had the kind of bogeys and double bogeys that you see of 5 and 6 handicappers. So let's be honest, he had 3 doubles and he had 8 bogeys over the course of the 4 days. You know, do you think he's any chance of winning a Grand Slam with that kind of form?
No, you can't expect to win Grand Slams or to win major championships with that, making those sort of mistakes. if you do that at Augusta, you're going to get penalized. And it doesn't offer up as many chances as a course like Sherwood,
yeah,
which has, you know, I think it has 5 par 5s, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, there, you know, we all know the holes that you can possibly make birdies on, but the par 5 15 to Augusta, you know, is treacherous. It's not a long par 5, but, you know, if you don't put your drive in the right place, you're faced with a very daunting second shot. Yeah. You can't even lay up, because if you lay up to 100 yards or so, you're playing a wedge of a downslope to a green that's raised above you. It's still a brilliant hole. It's survived the test of time. And Rory isn't going to get away with mistakes in Augusta like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's got to sharpen up his game. He hasn't got really much time as well. I think the Zozo was probably the last competitive outing for a lot of the top players before Augusta. I don't think many of them will play at Houston, the Houston Open next week. Obviously, not many of them. No one's going to play of the top 50 in the world. They're going to play at Bermuda.
Yeah.
Apart from maybe Brendan Todd, who's defending. And Houston is also doubtful as well. Apparently, Houston's going to have 2,000 fans.
Ooh.
It's a kind of an experiment to reintroduce, okay, you know, a small number of fans. And that brings in the COVID issue more. We saw what happened to Scottie Scheffler and Sam Horsfield before the US Open. They tested positive. It's clear that the bubble that the PGA Tour have created isn't complete and isn't watertight compared to the European Tour. So they're getting a lot of positive cases. We've seen Dustin Johnson and Adam Scott test positive. We've seen Tony Finau a few weeks ago as well. So really, Zozo was the last competitive outing, I'd say. I don't think you'll see Tiger. Phil has talked about not playing Houston. Maybe he normally likes to play a competitive tournament before the week before a major. So yeah, Rory will really have to get his game together at home in Florida and then in the practice rounds at Augusta.
So he snapped his club on Thursday, obviously frustrated. He, as usual, has reversed himself into the leaderboard on Sunday. And finally, to cap it all off, a shocking hoodie. So I'm sorry, the hoodie was shocking. It was like the hoodie we saw a couple of weeks ago.
Well, it's great to hear you're slagging his fashion to use some of the shirts.
Well, you know, it can't beat a bit of color, but that hoodie for me.
I'm only joking.
That hoodie for me was just. No, sorry, who's the previous hoodie? My brain's gone. Who had the hoodie for the
beer? Tyrrell Hatton.
Sorry, Tyrrell Hatton's hoodie. I thought maybe it was the color, but Tyrrell Hatton's hoodie was a much more fashionable hoodie, I felt, than Rory's. Rory's hoodie was one for the sofa. I'm sorry, it wasn't one for a final day.
It didn't look. It looked a bit pennies, didn't it?
He said it. It looked a bit pennies. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I'm not sure about that, Rory. I'm not sure about that at all. Finally, then to wrap up, it's Nigel's picks and Nigel's predictions, but I'm sure this guy has got to be in your numbers and in your metrics leading into the Masters, Bubba. Bob Watson. So I'm going to pose the question to you. Is he going to win his third green jacket? So he was fifth in the field in strokes gained tee to green this week. And since the PGA, only DJ is averaging more tee to green per round than Watson is. So is he coming to form at the right time for his third jacket?
He's definitely, his game seems to be peaking at the right time. And, you know, he clearly loves Augusta. Radar Riley on Sky mentioned him as his number one picks at the moment. I'm not sure I would totally be as strong on him as other people. I still think there are weaknesses in his putting. You know, you mentioned that his strokes gained tee to green has been, you know, only seconds to Dustin. So that's going to be a big advantage around Augusta. But, you know, I think his putting is a bit weak, and sometimes his scrambling isn't the best. I caught a couple of glimpses of him at the Zozo, and You know, he looked in form, but he looked at times ratty as well. I don't know. I just...
Yeah, we'll leave him there for now, but he's definitely...
He's a good shout, but I'm not convinced. No, okay. I'm not convinced.
Cool. Moving on then. So I'm going to go into other news, but this is a brief one this week because I'll just open this by saying we're going to do a WHS special this week. It'll be released probably Thursday or Friday of this week. Let's say Friday. We're going to have a WH special. We're actually going to record it tonight with a few beers, but we're going to release that on about Friday of this week, a real WH special, because of course on the 2nd of November, that's the big local news at least, that we are changing over to the new World Handicapping System from Monday the 2nd of November. So we'll have a special on that, and that's really our Rules Corner episode. But aside from that then, the lockdown. So when we spoke last, Nigel, we were waiting on the GUI and what they were going to do. I was of the view that they were going to do something similar to what they did in May, which was 5K restrictions, but golf clubs would open. You were of the view, if I remember correctly, that everything's just going to be shut down. Golf clubs are going to be shut down. You were right. You were absolutely correct. GUI, the following day, announced that they were going to lock down all golf clubs. So all golf clubs are closed. Nigel, how do you feel about it at this stage? What's your view on it at this stage, weekend?
Well, I disagree with it. I wasn't surprised, or as I said, I expected it. But my own opinion is that it's way too strict and it's completely unnecessary. And there are a few things that are now permitted. Like you can still go to Harvey Norman's and buy a fridge, which I might do myself. but you can't go playing golf. You can go to, say, St. Dan's or Herbert Park on the south side, or anywhere around to various farmers markets or farmer style markets, and all the stalls will be close together and loads of people can be congregating around those. And I mean, that's fine. I have no problem with that. But then you don't allow golf playing where people aren't congregating together and are staying apart in a game that's naturally socially distant. We've talked before about the lack of political clout that the GUI has. I think the fact that GAA clubs and underage competitions have been cancelled or postponed is a big factor in closing of golf clubs. I think my view of the GAA has gone down massively during this pandemic because they've used their own massive political influence to make sure that all sport follows their kind of rules, essentially. If they can't play, well, no one else can play. I've heard stories that they've lost, or a lot of the GA players have joined golf clubs, you know, and become very interested in the game while waiting for championships to start up again. And I think there's a worry within the GA that they'll lose players. I think they should, you know, I think young guys are going to play all games. They're not going to just stop playing Ga or hurling because they suddenly got the golf bug, mm-hmm. or the golf addiction, although it is very strong.
Oh, I would say it's an addiction, if I'm honest.
I don't know. I'm starting rambling here, but I totally disagree with this ban.
You're definitely not in defense.
Yeah, it needs to be reviewed in the next couple of weeks because I don't think it really makes sense. Part of me could understand it from a political point of view in the sense that, again, in relation to other sports and other parts of society, if they're going to be locked down, then why should the golfers get away with it as such? Maybe I could see that point of view. But there's actually a lot of stuff that's going on that's not being either policed or still happening.
Yeah.
And I think golfers are able to regulate themselves. And as I said, it's a natural game of where social distancing is easily achieved. And there's just a natural kind of aspect of the game. So there's no really need to ban it.
Yeah, I agree. I think the lockdown is about, you know, ensuring safety, right? That's what the lockdown is about. It's about ensuring safety. It's not about punishing any particular industries or sports. It's not about saying, no, you're bold now, so you must close down. That's not what this is about. They haven't taken any of the policies at government level, haven't been about punishing industries or closing down industries because they've been naughty. It's about creating safety. So with that in mind, there is no, I think, justifiable reason to close down golf at the moment. Unless you want to punish the sport. If you're saying, you know, because of Golfgate or because of the fact that people are leaving other sports and going to your sport, we're going to have to hold you back a little bit here, folks, because that would be unfair. I think that would be an unjustifiable reason to close it down. I hope that's not the case, but you've definitely raised that as a potential question as to whether that could be part of the reason why. And I don't think it's justifiable if those are the reasons. I think it would be absolutely disgraceful if those were reasonings behind the closing down of golf. We shall never know unless we get a job there in Sports Ireland and find out what's going on. So if I can move on from there, we've got the RNA COVID-19 funds. That's been confirmed. A total of almost 600,000 is going to be awarded to 110 clubs that applied for the fund. I think 96% of clubs were successful in their applications. These are not to large clubs. They're aimed at small to medium-sized clubs that have been significantly impacted due to COVID. But as I say, 96% of applications were successful. So that's some form of a rebate back to clubs in the region of around, you know, 5,000 to 10,000 euros. Again, dropping the ocean for many clubs who've lost significant amount of money throughout COVID. But nonetheless, it could be the difference between keeping businesses open or not when it comes to golf. Hopefully, our own club will get a few bob there as well, which could be put into various different things within the golf club. Okay, moving on. So we're going to go out of news and into Nigel's picks for the Bermuda Championship. So Nigel, tell us, we've got Irish interest at this one.
Yes, Mr. Seamus Power is making an appearance after a couple of weeks off.
Go on to Dacia.
And he's going to make an appearance later on in my picks.
Ooh, okay. I like
this. The Bermuda Championship is, this is the second year of the Bermuda Championship. Last year, it was an alternate opposite event against the WGC Champions event in Shanghai, but that event has been cancelled, so the Bermuda Championship has been elevated to a full PGA tournament with 500 FedEx Cup points, and I think there's a place at the Players, PGA and Masters for the winner. So it's kind of elevated the tournament and made it a bit more attractive. I don't think the field is still not that great. It's a bit better than last year. We have major champions in the likes of Henrik Stenson. We've got some good players there. As I said, Brendan Todd is defending. He's second favorite. But our favorite in the betting market is Will Zalatoris, who I got an each way on at the US Open. But Will is still waiting to become a fully fledged PGA Tour player. I think if he makes the cut this week, it'll be enough to get him that special tour membership. But the fact that he's the favourite shows you that this is definitely a weakened field. That said, I think there are definite prospects further down the market that are worth considering. I'd keep stakes to a minimum maybe this week, or maybe wait till Saturday morning after the first two rounds, because it's a kind of a difficult tournament to predict with such a range of players, you know, journeymen, up and coming players, and
so let's
also
not
the
blow,
weather is going to be a big factor.
Let's not blow all our winnings.
Yeah, let's
on
not
this
blow
one.
The Cantley winnings straight away. Anyway, our headline selection this week is a guy who's made an appearance in previous weeks. Steny McCarthy is the headline selection.
On Guinea,
good old man with the Cork connection.
Oh yeah,
he's 28-1 with a certain bookmaker at the moment. You might get better in other places, but maybe not get the full eight places. But we're going 2 points each way for Denny. He's had a very good run of form recently. He was tied sixth to Sanderson. He was tied 15th here in Bermuda last year. He had a top 10 at the Wyndham. Wyndham's got Bermuda greens. This week we're going to have Bermuda greens. He clearly plays well on them. He's a solid ball striker, but his putting stats have been really, really good. He's currently just outside the top 20 in the putting stats and was pretty much the top player in strokes gained putting on the greens last season. So this is a short course here at Bermuda. It's only 6,800 yards, par 71. And really, the driver is taken out of the hands of a lot of players. So basically, the whole field will be in with a shout this week if they play well. You know, we don't, this is not going to be a bomber's paradise. A whole range of players, short hitters, big hitters, you know, scramblers, good putters, good iron players, have all got a chance this week. Ultimately, I think putting is going to be the thing that separates players, as it normally does in most weeks. So I think Denny McCarthy is a good bet to take the championship this week. Again, 28-1, 2 points each way. Our second selection is Pat Perez, 45-1, 1.25 points each way. Pat is, you know, he's had a mixed run of it. He missed a couple of cuts recently, but he had a top 10 at the Safeway. The Corrales in Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic, which is a similar sort of event to this. He was just outside the top 20, and he actually threatened to go better. I think there's a bit of potential there. He likes these sort of seaside coastal tracks. He's won in Mayacoba in Mexico, which is a similar course. So, yeah, 45-1. You might get 50-1 other places, but I think he's a good bet. He'll give you a good run for your money. Third selection is Scott Harrington. He's not related to Porik. He's 100-1, 0.7 points each way. He is a late bloomer. I think he's a rookie this year, but he's nearly 40 years old. But he's played well here at Bermuda before. He hit a shot 64 in one of the rounds last week. Last year, he shot 65 in his open round at Corrales. Didn't back it up with following rounds, but still finished well at Corrales within the top 15. You know, he hasn't had an amazing season. You know, there are missed cuts there. But I think at this sort of level and this type of event, especially on this type of course, I think he's going to be very competitive. As I said before, our fourth selection is a traditional Irish selection, Seamus Power. I know I've put him up before, and he's become a bit of a regular feature with the pod, but he's also 100-1, 0.75 points each way. Similar to Scott Arrington, his recent form is very patchy. He's missed a couple of cuts, but at the end of last season, he was pushing to get his full tour card and was playing well. He had good performances at the, I think it was the 3M and the Wyndham. He plays well in Bermuda greens. He's going to be very accustomed to, if it gets windy at a coastal track, that's just going to be like links conditions in Ireland. So that shouldn't be a problem for him. Again, we're taking a bit of a speculation on him because his recent form isn't that great. But I think he can definitely be competitive this week. At the same price and the same stakes, we're going to pick Andrew Putnam as the fifth selection. I'm taking Andrew, who did get into the top 50 last year and won a similar tournament to this at the Barracuda, this sort of competition last year. But since then, it's kind of his form has, you know, fallen off a cliff because that win got him into the top 50 in the world. But especially since COVID hit, he hasn't really done much. But there's one factor in his life that may turn it around for him. He's become a father for the second time in the last week. He's shown a sort of signs of life recently. And again, this is speculation, but at 100-1, 0.75 points each way, it's not going to break the bank. Our last two selections are both 150-1, and we'll go a half point each way with them. The first one is Kelly Kraft, a former US amateur champion who played very well at Corrales recently. He's playing on a medical exemption at the moment, but he definitely showed that he was back to some of his best. Had a hole in one there and was in the, I think, might have been the last group or the second last group going into the final round. So his form is back, and 150-1 is probably overpriced. And our last pick is Aaron Baddeley, Australian guy. He's now US-based. You know, he likes playing in the wind. His form is not great recently. He's missed a lot of cuts. But again, we're taking the speculation that a coastal track with the wind blowing quite strong will bring back his competitive juices and he'll have a good run. So as I say, stakes to minimum this week. Will I go through the seven selections again? Yeah. Or will just tell you that they're on trickydogleg.com.
Even better. So trickydogleg.com.
And you can check them out.
Bit of an Irish feel to them. We've got Danny McCarthy, sounds like a good Irish name. Scott Harrington's Padraig's brother. Not. But Padraig is in action as well. So just for the record, Padraig Harrington is in the field.
That's right. Yeah. And he's actually, 45. He's played reasonably well since he came back.
He has, hasn't he?
I wouldn't put people off backing him. The only thing is, he's quite short for a guy that's, you know, still 40, on the way back.
45 to 1, I see here, at the minute. Yeah.
Yeah.
Similar.
If you went to a non-Irish bookmaker, you might get a better price.
That's for sure. Yeah. We've got Seamus Power in here as well. So it's got an Irish feel to it, I must say, even though really the only Irishman on the list is Seamus Power, but it's got an Irish feel to it. So, yeah, it's definitely worth a few bob. And as you say, save a few bob from our winnings, particularly for the Masters, I think. So let's not
yeah.
blow our winnings here just yet. Okay, thanks, Nigel. So I'm going to wrap it up pretty quickly there because we're going to move on shortly and we're going to do our WHS special. So for all of our viewers, just please stay tuned. Later on this week, we're going to reveal our WHS podcast. So it's going to be a special podcast. So tune in. Yeah. Thanks, Nigel, for joining us as always.
Thanks, Fat Dermot. Talk to you soon.
Take care.
You've been listening to Brad Golf Podcast. Hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Please do come back soon and join me for another round. So just to confirm, this podcast is not sponsored in any way. All views expressed in this podcast are my own and do not represent the opinions of any entity whatsoever with which I have been, am now, or will be affiliated. Please do subscribe to the podcast, Brad Golf TV. You'll find me on Spotify, Pocket Casts, Google, etc., etc. Please follow, like, retweet, and share on social media. It's Brad Golf TV on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube. On Facebook, you'll find me at bradgolf.ie. And you can also drop me an email at bradgolftv@gmail.com. Looking forward to hearing from you in the weeks and months ahead.